This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view. The people who work in the prison system would have another. And I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio, 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains audio images of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died. This is Marissa, and I'll be with you for the next hour. And I'm back live in the studio after summer programming. Joining us, first of all, we have an interview with Catherine Strong from the Defend Dissent Coalition, who will give us an update about anti-protest laws and looking at police powers in general in Victoria and a little bit about federal police powers as well. Catherine and I were discussing off air about New South Wales and what happened at Bondi and looking at what happened as a result of that. And of course, we honour the fact that there have been dreadful things that have happened there, and condolences to all the dead. So we'll be focusing particularly on anti-protest laws, particularly face coverings. And then we'll bring you an interview with Uncle Kelvin from the Mile Creek campaign, who will discuss the Mile Creek massacre and just have a yarn in general. After that, you will hear from Dan, who's been formally incarcerated, and he's gone into partnership with several other people who have been incarcerated, but in particular with the beautiful Tabitha Lean, who is a wonderful activist and has been on this show many times. And they have started up a wonderful project, which we'll talk about, called Rad Faction. And that's an alternative media resource and publishing platform. And it looks at, the initials are, I'll read it out in full, Resist, Agitate and Disrupt. So we'll be talking more about that with Dan after we speak with Uncle. But first up, let's cross over now to Catherine.
The state Labor government has begun works on demolishing Melbourne's 44 public housing towers to be replaced with private housing. Already hundreds of residents have been displaced, often into unsuitable homes under duress. The tower at 12 Holland Court, Flemington has become a Homes Victoria work site, while the families still living in the building are being treated appallingly. Join Save Public Housing supporters in solidarity with residents. Weekdays 7 to 9am and 4:30 to 6:30pm as we engage with passing traffic to make some noise and show Jacinta Allen that the demolition of public housing is unacceptable. Signs and banners provided, or bring your own. There's power in numbers, so see you out on Racecourse Road at the front of 12 Holland Court, Flemington, 7 to 9am or 4:30 to 6:30pm. Check Save Public Housing Instagram page for weekly updates. Save Public Housing is a 3CR supporter.
And you're listening to the Doin' Time Show, 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial. The Human Rights Law Centre welcomes Victoria Police ending the 6-month designation of the of the entire of Melbourne CBD over 4 months before it was set to finish. The designation enabled Victoria Police to stop and search anyone in the Melbourne CBD for no reason and order people to leave the area if they refused to remove a face covering. The decision came after Tarnine Onus Brown and Benny Zabel, represented by the Human Rights Law Centre, filed an urgent legal and constitutional challenge in the federal court seeking to have the challenge determined before Invasion Day on 26 January. And this case is the first challenge to Victoria Police's extraordinary powers in designated areas. On the line, we have Catherine Strong, and she is from the Defend Dissent Coalition. We'll speak a little bit about the court case, but primarily we'll be speaking with her in terms of how she sees police powers from an activist perspective. And later on, in the upcoming weeks, I'll speak with the Human Rights Law Centre about the legal challenge. But I wanted to invite Catherine because she came onto our show last year and gave us some excellent coverage on the Defend Dissent Coalition rally that happened, and there is a rally coming up. Hello, Catherine. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks very much for having me.
Lovely to have you. So, Catherine, could you just give us a little bit of a background about what's happening with police powers and also in light of the dreadful Bondi incident as well?
Yeah, so we have seen over the last few years the government in Victoria and also in other places around Australia just extending police powers more and more and also cracking down more and more on people's right to protest and people's right to speak up about things that they think are important. And one of the things that happened last year was that the Allan government gave police much greater powers in terms of these things called designated areas, which is where they can say that for a certain period of time, people can be searched without a warrant, that they can demand that people leave and they have to, and that they have to take off face coverings. And for a long time, they were only able to be put in place for, I think it was 3 days, and they were then given this new power to be able to put them in place for up to 6 months at a time. So for 6 months, you could have an area where the police can do a lot of things that normally they can't do and that there are good reasons that they normally can't do, because searching people, going through their property, demanding that they do things, police shouldn't be able to do those things with impunity. So it's very concerning that they have been given these expanded powers, and it is really fantastic that people have pretty much immediately responded with this law, this case in the courts. So Tarnine Brown and Benny Zabel, as you mentioned, and that they have framed that in particular in relation to Invasion Day. Because as we know, when police get more powers, the first group that is impacted by that is First Nations people and then people of colour. And so the idea that police powers could be in place to interfere with Invasion Day was certainly very concerning, and it's good to see that that court case seems to have made the police back down for the moment at least.
Right, and I think that happened last week, didn't it?
Yes, yes, quite recently, yeah. So the case is in court, and I think that they've just heard the sort of initial arguments that people are putting forward. And at the moment, there seems to be something going on about just how the law is interpreted and whether the police commissioner has made the right interpretation of what is going on in that law. And that's often the case with these things, that it comes down to, you know, one word or a phrase, and the way that it then gets interpreted by the judiciary can make a huge difference as to what happens to us on the streets.
Absolutely. And in fact, women, we're probably not time to talk too much about that, but I've got plans actually to have a look at all this hate speech legislation that they're wanting to put in as well.
Yes.
It's pretty connected. It is, isn't it, setting in some ways very dangerous precedents, even though it's needed in some ways.
Yes, yes. Look, and I think it's really important for us all to remember that as we see these new attempts to put more and more laws in the wake of Bondi, that we don't just respond to it as though it is about Bondi, because what I've just described is a whole bunch of laws that were brought in last year. They weren't brought in this year. So this is just part of a process. And I think it is very obvious to a lot of people that the attempts that the federal government and the Victorian government and the New South Wales government, the things they've been doing to bring in these new anti-protest laws or threatening to do it, and these hate speech laws, it's not just a response to Bondi. They have wanted to do these things for a long time, and Bondi has given them an opportunity, and they are taking advantage of that. And I think it's quite cynical, and it's very disappointing that people's personal tragedies can be taken advantage of in this way.
Absolutely, and in fact, we know also that there's a Palestinian rally happening every Sunday. What about that?
Well, I am very sure that one of the things that people in power want to happen is that there are no more Palestinian rallies. So Jacinta Allen made that very clear last year when she spoke about people at those rallies as extremists. And so I think, again, this situation with Bondi is a perfect opportunity for people who already didn't want those rallies to happen to try and shut them down once and for all.
Because that was
and
before
Bondi.
And
we can't let it happen.
Yeah, that was before Bondi.
Yes. Yeah. This has been going on for years now, yeah.
Absolutely, and I'm so glad that you've drawn attention to that fact, Catherine. And could you just tell us a little bit about the Defend Dissent Coalition and some of the rallies that have been organised, and also discuss the upcoming rally that's coming up?
Yes, so thank you. So we are a group that is comprised of a lot of different groups who are activist groups, community groups, and what we are focused on is pushing back against these attempts to restrict our free speech and our right to protest and our right to say the opposite thing to what the people in power are saying, so our right to dissent. And we are groups that are likely to be impacted by those sorts of laws. So it's environmental groups, climate groups, Palestine focus groups, obviously, but also groups of people who are who suffer from long COVID, for instance, who were going to be disproportionately impacted by the laws around making people take their masks off. So it's a group. It's different groups who don't want to see these laws being passed. And I think we sort of operate in an ecosystem that also includes other groups like the Human Rights Centre and the Racial Profiling Group, all of those sorts of groups that document what happens when you bring these sorts of laws in as well. And we really like value what they do and draw on it a lot.
Sure.
Yeah.
Cool. So when's the rally?
So the next rally. Sorry, I think I was ranting a bit there, but
no, you weren't at all. No, that was very useful.
The 3rd of February is the next rally that we're going to have, and the reason we're holding this rally is because Jacinta Allen has already said that she wants to bring in laws like the ones that have been brought in New South Wales after Bondi, which are around more legislation around what people can say on social media, giving police the ability to move protests on in certain periods of time after something has happened, so giving police even more powers than they already have, and a bunch of other things. So more and more anti-protest laws, and this is on top of the quite extensive suite of anti-protest laws that were implemented by the State Parliament at the end of last year. So this is just putting more and more things on top of each other to make life difficult for us.
Absolutely. And so the rally's on the 3rd of February. Whereabouts and what time?
It will be at 5:30 on the steps of State Parliament. So the 3rd of February is the first sitting day for the Victorian Parliament for the year.
That's on a Tuesday, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, Tuesday, yes.
Beautiful. So just for listeners, it's a rally that's coming up on Tuesday, the 3rd of February?
3rd of February, yep.
At 5:30? And it's protesting against the police powers.
Yes. And any further protest laws that people are thinking about bringing in. We need to stop this just happening and happening and happening, because we will end up with no rights when it comes to this stuff.
Absolutely. And you mentioned racial profiling, and we talked about that last year, and it needs to be mentioned again. And it really is commendable, isn't it, Catherine, that the First Nations activists have gone in and gone to court.
Yes, and so important that they've done that, because the last thing anybody wants to see is something like Invasion Day not being able to, the rally for Invasion Day not being able to go ahead, because it's such an important moment for everyone to come together and just think about what has happened on this continent and what needs to be done to make things better. So, yeah, get along to that on the 26th as well.
Get along to that on the 26th, and also that 3CR is also having some special broadcasting for Invasion Day from 10 till 6, and I actually won't be doing the show on that Monday, the Doing Time show, but I'll be doing the breakfast show in the morning for a special broadcast. Catherine, do you have any final comments before we finish?
I think that it is very important at this moment in time for people to be prepared to stand for what they know is right, because I think a lot of people can see that some of the laws that people are talking about putting in place in this country are coming from a very cynical place, and they're coming from a place that is going to protect some people at the expense of others. And it's hard to push back against that when it's being framed as you are anti-Semitic if you even say anything about it, or as though you don't care about the people who lost their lives at Bondi. But it's a moment for us to really do that as much as we can if we have the capacity.
Indeed, Catherine, and that is a very, very important point. And let's have you back again, around the time that that rally happens, and talk more about that.
I would love to be on again. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and it was great to hear from you. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care.
Lest we forget, join us to commemorate the 184th anniversary of the execution of the two Indigenous freedom fighters, Tunaminaway and Morbohina, the first men hung in Victoria for resisting white colonisation.
This is a story of colonisation. It's a story that's been told before.
It's the Tuesday, the 25th of January at midday, at the Tunaminaway and Morbohina Monument at the corner of Victoria and Franklin Street in Melbourne. The ceremony will be broadcast live on Community Radio 3CR. At 1 p.m. after the broadcast, we'll be walking down the Queen Victoria Market to what we believe is their burial site, where the ceremony will continue for another hour. Please bring flowers to the event.
And next up, we have a very special guest. We've got Uncle Calvin, Calvin Brown, who is actually one of the Mile Creek campaigners. And I've spoken with Uncle many times. Hello, Uncle.
How are you, my sweet?
It's great to have you. Now, Uncle, can you just tell us what land you're from, just so listeners know?
So, sorry, what was that?
What land you come from?
Oh, I'm Gamilaroi. This up this way is Gamilaroi, Gomeroi, Gamilaroi, and all of that sort of stuff, Yellaroi and all that sort of stuff. But myself, I personally call it Gamilaroi, Gamilaroi country, which is one of the third largest tribal lands in the entire nation, not just like here and in New South Wales, but no, throughout the country. It is an incredibly large land space, and it's ours, yeah, Gamilaroi.
Thank you so much, Uncle Calvin. Do you know, all I really wanted to do today is very simple. I really wanted to just have a yarn with you leading up to Invasion Day, because everybody has different opinions about it. But I wanted to really acknowledge and honour the massacre at Mile Creek and some of the wonderful work that you and the rest of the committee have done, because I think it's really important to talk about these really important campaigns as a lead-up to Monday. So could you, for any new listeners that have just tuned in, could you just tell us about Mile Creek?
Okay, well, for those who aren't aware, Mile Creek, the massacre that happened there with 28 Aboriginal people, men, women and children, particularly babies. It was just a massacre on a scale that in schemes of others might have been rather small. But it had such a big impact because there were Aboriginal people that died that day, and there were white people that perpetrated those acts. But the thing is, there were also white people that came along and did the right thing and said, "Well, this is wrong. We can't do this stuff." And they brought it to the attention of the governor at that time, which was Governor Gipps, G-I-P-P-S. And he said, "Well, this doesn't sound right." And so he sent a police magistrate, a magistrate in opinion. But he came up here and he did the investigation. He came back and he took evidence. He took statements and all that. So he arrested people and he brought them back to Sydney, and they undertook a trial. Now, the first trial was rather academic. It was about 11 people that killed 28 people, okay, and those 11 people were white and the 28 people were black. And it said, all right, they killed them, you know. And then evidence was called and the judicial process was put through. And at the end of that first trial, the magistrate turned around and said, "How does the jury feel in this process?" And the jury turned around and said, "We find that these 11 men who have been charged with the massacre of or murder of 28 Aboriginal people to be, they're not guilty." And the people within the stocks at that time, within the court process, they were very happy. They thought, "Oh, we just killed 28 people and we got away with it." And then the magistrate did something extraordinary. He said, "Well, I'm not going to release you just yet." He says, "I've got some opinions of my own." And he spoke to the police prosecutor at that time, which was an Irish chap. And he turned around and he said, "How do you wish to move forward in this regard, Attorney General?" And the Attorney General at that time turned around and said, "Well, I'd like to have to go back and recharge these people under separate circumstances." And the magistrate said, "Well, what are those circumstances?" "Well, I can see right now that I cannot get 11 people charged with the murder or massacre of 28. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go back and I'm going to charge 7 people with the murder of one, a child unknown." And the magistrate said, "Explain," and he said, "Well, when we went up there to the massacre site and we brought back evidence, part of that evidence was the remains of a child, name unknown." He said, "Now, I can't get all of these 11 charged with this, but I can certainly get 7 of them put into play in regards to what they did and how they conducted themselves on the day." And so the magistrate said, "All right, let's move forward." And they went through a second court case, and witnesses were called, and, you know, evidence was put forward and all of that sort of, including the remains of a child, which came down from Myall Creek for the purpose of if we needed to go to a court process. And then after all the second hearing was done, they turned around and they said, "All right, okay, how does the jury find in this regard?" And this is where it gets a bit interesting. The jury foreman stood up and he said, "We find in this case of 7 people charged with the death of one as not guilty." And the court went up in flames. half the court was saying, oh, well done, oh, God, we got away with it. Yes, absolutely magic, beautiful. And half the court was saying, what? What the hell's going on here? This isn't right.
Yeah.
And about 10 seconds later, one of the jury people who was sitting next to the jury foreman said, can I say something? And the magistrate turned around and said, yes, well, what would you like to say? He said, well, that's not true. He said, what? What's not true? He said, we haven't found these people not guilty. We've actually found them guilty. They are guilty as charged. And the magistrate looked at the jury foreman and said, explain yourself. And the jury foreman said, I misspoke. I do apologise to the court. And yes, we as a jury have found that these seven people are guilty of the death of one. Now, the magistrate had a few other words to say about that particular jury foreman. But he basically then turned around and said, OK, we've got a finding of guilty here. Where do we move from here? Well, I could wait for X amount of time and give down a finding of how I'm going to penalise these people, but I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do it right now. I find these people guilty as charged under the judicial process and jury's outcome. And we are going to go to this. You will be summarily taken away to Hyde Park Barracks, detained there for long enough as we can get the gallows made up, which is the hanging from his noose. And at the end of that, you will be summarily executed by hanging. Why? Because you murdered or massacred 28 people. And that cannot be allowed. And that is the outcome of the massacre of Mile Creek from a judicial point. But the outcome from a social point was even more incredible, because half of the, how shall we say it, the society at that time said, oh, well, how is it that Aboriginal people can be killed and white people be held responsible for it, because we kill white, we kill black people all the time. It shouldn't be that we get held regard for it.
See, this
and then the other side of the community have turned around and said, no, they're not animals. These are people. They should be held in regard as being human beings. And they said, no, this is the right outcome. And so we had half the people saying, you can't do this. And the other saying, it's about bloody time.
Absolutely.
And I heard the tail end of what you were talking about before I came on about digital processes and all that sort of stuff. But the thing is, I have an attitude myself personally, which is this. The only way we can move forward as a people in a society, whether we're Aboriginal or not Aboriginal, is to look at each other's stories from each other's standpoint. We can't just come along and say, oh, this way is the only way. No, you can't do that. Mm. You look at all sides and you make a decision from that. If you turn a ring on and say, with the stuff that's been put in front of you, evidence or facts or whatever else like that, and you take it for granted that it is the way it is, you'll say, well, we'll make a decision on that. But what happens if some of those information that you've been given is wrong or false? Then you have to turn around and say, well, if that's the case, then we have to change our decision. Of course. What we've got here is judicial society in regard to Aboriginal people at the moment within not only just New South Wales but right throughout Australia is from a point of view of saying, if you were in a place of power, you can push your narrative and make that narrative be the outcome. Whereas the ones who are being oppressed, you turn around and say, well, what about this is happening to us. We're being impacted by this. And we say, well, no, well, we've got to look at that as well. Mm-hmm. And I listened to the tail end of that previous conversation you've had before I came on, and I totally agree. We do need to fight back against what we call oppressive processes. Let's call it white versus black, and try and get things sorted out. But we can't always have a black ideal. We can't always have a white ideal. Let's meet in the middle. And I've been pushing this for more than 40 years. I've always said every side has a story. Every side has facts. Every side has a focus point of view. We come along and all we want to do is push our own ideal without taking consideration of others. We're just setting ourselves up for failure, whether we're white or black.
But that's what we have to show. Because it's really important that people from all communities come together on this show to have a yarn and talk about different things.
I'm going to be doing something on Australia Day, which is Invasion Day, where I'm going to do a walk in the country. I'm going to be talking to people and so forth. And I'm going to be having the opportunity to take the Australia Day ambassador for my community to somewhere that they feel that they need to have cultural impact, significance in what they're doing here. They're not just here just to, you know, just for a happy Australia Day or happy Invasion Day. And I'm taking this Australia Day ambassador out to Myall Creek. I'm going to tell this ambassador this is what happened. So that ambassador is then going to go back and she's going to report back to the people that she comes from. And she's going to say, well, what did you do while you were up in Ingerell in northern New South Wales, northwest New South Wales? Well, I did Australia Day. I went out there and I did my bits and pieces and all that sort of stuff. And I recognise that for some people it's Invasion Day and everything else. But you know what also I did? I went out to a massacre site and I learned about that. And I understand now what some of the issues are that impact Aboriginal people because of the fact it's been put right in front of me. I haven't been put to the side. I've been taken to a place that actually matters.
Uncle, do you reckon you would join me for the breakfast? Oh, no, hang on, you're busy on Monday, aren't you? That's right. You can't join
Monday.
Me for the breakfast show.
Oh, no, what time? I'm starting from around about 7 o'clock in the morning until around about, yeah, whatever.
Well, look, I'll call you off air. I mean, I've got to go now, but I'll call you off air and we'll talk about it because, honestly, I really enjoy your company and I could listen to your stories all day because you're amazing.
Oh, thank you, my darling.
And I really love talking with you. And I'm wondering, can you join? I'd love to have you back on Monday during the breakfast show in the morning. And we can have a chat about
depending
it.
Depending on when it starts, because I'm going to be down at Australia Day, Asian Day ceremonies down at our park here in Inverell.
Oh, lovely. You might clash, but we will talk about it. Mm-hmm. But, look, it's been a real honour. And, Uncle, I've got to move on now in a minute, I'm afraid. But look, let's have you back again. I mean, you know, I'm not going to leave the country anytime soon.
No, neither am I, but if I'm going to leave the country, I'm going to go to Spain. I love Spain.
Oh, my God, that'll be amazing. Oh, my goodness, Uncle, you've made my day. All right.
Well, okay, darling.
We'll talk really soon, and also just to let listeners know that I'll be doing some more coverage on Myall Creek, you know, up in June, where the, you know, the occasional...
Yes, march. Yes, when we have the gathering, yes, yes.
Lovely. Definitely. Thanks,
and
Uncle.
Thank you, my darling. Bye.
We'll talk soon. Okay. Bye.
Monday, the 26th of January, marks Invasion Day, and 3CR's First Nations broadcast team will be bringing an annual Invasion Day broadcast to the airwaves from 10 a.m.
In 1788, down Sydney Cove, first boat people land, and they say, sorry boys, I gained your loss, we're gonna steal your land.
Our team will be broadcasting speeches from the NAM rally and conversations with people attending the march, as well as connecting with Aboriginal activists from across the continent at the forefront of campaigns for land rights, restoration, restitution and real treaties, and learning about the way it may be done. And of course, we'll be playing deadly music from our incredible black artists, past and present. So keep it tuned to 3CR, 8:55 a.m., 3CR Digital, 3cr.org.au streaming live on Monday the 26th of January from 10 a.m.
And you're back with the Doin' Time Show, and it's Marissa, and I'm going to be speaking now with another really special guest, and I'm going to be speaking with Dan, who's been formerly incarcerated, and Tabitha Lean, who's also been a part of this show as a guest, introduced me to Dan. And Dan has been in prison for 12 years, and he'll talk about a little bit about his lived experience. And he's going to talk about a really wonderful alternative media resource and publishing platform called Rad Faction. Resist, agitate and disrupt. I love it, I love it. So we're going to be talking with Dan pretty soon. He's been heavily involved with advocacy for prisoners' rights. And this particular resource is really looking at abusive systems of power in regards to prisoners and policing and vulnerable people and communities. Hello, Dan. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Marissa.
Lovely to have you. Now, did you want to just... you're live. Did you want to just start off and tell us a bit about yourself and talk about Rad Faction? Is that right?
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, myself, I spent almost 12 years in prison, currently studying for a law degree in my third year of that degree. I coordinate my own advocacy called Level Up, where I advocate for the rights of prisoners and advocate against abuse of government power. And now, as you said, co-founder and co-editor with colleague Tabitha Lean of Rad Faction, our alternative media project. Rad Faction itself, as you said, stands for Resist, Agitate and Disrupt, and that's really the objective of the project, to resist, agitate and disrupt abusive systems of power. We do that by offering a media source, alternative to the mainstream media, to assist people in understanding abusive systems impacting our community, and helping people impacted by these abusive systems to fight back or mitigate against that abuse.
Fantastic. And Tabitha is actually a wonderful First Nations activist who's also been formerly incarcerated. How did you two get to meet and create the resource?
So we've both been working in the activism sort of advocacy area, supporting prisoners. Tabitha works for Sisters Inside. She's a staunch abolitionist that fights for the rights of incarcerated and formerly incarcerated women. She's also, you know, concerned about the rights of all people in prison. And just through our work, we cross paths every now and then. And it wasn't really until around July last year I helped organise a rally in front of Yatala Labor Prison after finding out that an Aboriginal man was being held in solitary confinement and had been held there for almost 800 days, and he had his cultural supports denied by the general manager. As part of organising that rally, Tabitha was instrumental in helping get people, you know, through her community to attend that rally, and we had a really good turnout at the rally. The rally was reported well across local and national media, and there was a good result with the rally, with the person that was actually impacted and held in solitary being removed from solitary and again allowed visitations from cultural supports. So that's really how we started engaging and working, I guess, from that point on, seeing that our... foundational principles to our advocacy is really aligned And then we started working together on collaborating on a couple of projects.
Fantastic. So let's talk about the publishing platform a little bit more. So, and you're from Adelaide, right?
Correct.
Beautiful. So can you tell us, like, how it works? Like, what? How can people contribute to it? How do you get access to it?
Yeah, I mean, so primarily we have a website, which is www.radfaction.com.au. And, I mean, we hope to achieve our objective in a number of ways. And first, it's through that website where we publish opinion articles on issues highlighting abuse of power, such as abuse by prison authorities, abuse in policing, and laws that are enacted that ultimately target vulnerable people, disadvantaged people, and minorities in the community. Second, we're running mutual aid workshops that we host to bring together people from the community to discuss among each other their experiences of abuse and to develop avenues of care that do not rely on state agencies to manage crisis and hardships. And third, we're publishing physical publications, zines, where we take information that we've gathered and artwork that we gathered from our workshops, and we then distribute those publications for people to help people understand their rights and alternative avenues for support.
Fantastic. So it's really, really about looking at human rights, isn't it?
It is. It's really about rights, about understanding your rights and dealing with authorities, and about understanding the limitations of power of authorities when you are dealing with them.
Well, you've come to the right place. The Doing Time show is all about prisoners' rights, and it's about looking at marginalised communities and in particular focusing on First Nations content and racial profiling of not just First Nations but also people of colour as well. Mm. And but it's not just about that. It's about everybody. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, we all have to unite, don't we?
Correct. And, I mean, my experience through prison was that the issues, there were a lot of general issues that affecting the whole prison population. So, you know, it wasn't just one area of the prison. They're affecting Indigenous people. They're affecting other minorities.
Tell us about that. What are some of the things that the issues there in from your lived experience?
Well, often a lot of the, in relation to prison itself, a lot of the administrative processes are that complex that people actually don't understand the process itself. And because they don't understand the process, they don't get involved in the process. And one such process is the case review process and the case management process. So people go into prison and there's meant to be like a, I say meant to be in inverted commas, but there's meant to be a process that assists people in the rehabilitation through their imprisonment and then assist them with reintegration once they get out of prison. But to get involved in these processes, they're really difficult to understand how to best engage with that process. And I sort of compare it to playing a game of chess. If a person doesn't understand the rules and the moves in a game of chess, then they're probably going to lose the game and they're going to be disinterested and they're not going to participate in the game. And it's the same with the administrative processes in the prison. If there's no one to sit down with people and explain, you know, how can you best engage in the case review process? How can you make submissions in these processes? How can you ensure that the prison authorities really understand your particular circumstances so that whatever process they're going to initiate against you for rehabilitation, it's meaningful and effective?
That's right. And, you know, they say that once you go to prison, you never leave.
Well, that's what they say, and I like to hope to think I can change that narrative, and or at least help change that narrative, and through Rad Faction and through the work that we do.
Absolutely. So, with Rad Faction, draw us a picture. I mean, like, not literally, but tell us about how. What are some of the highlights for you? Like, any articles that have been written, do you think?
Look, I guess, like, to paint a picture of it. Both I and Tabitha have had articles published by other organisations.
Yeah.
And the difficulty in that is if there's an issue that crops today in the media and it needs like a really rapid response to keep it relevant, often, you know, we write articles, we submit them to other organisations for publication, and it could take weeks or even months before an article is published. And, you know, the publication of the article can be heavily sort of governed by the whatever those organisation stakeholders are. So they might say, oh, you know, we don't really want this in there. Can you edit that out of there? And so the idea for Rad Faction came as to say, you know, Tabitha and I are co-founders and co-editors. We can publish what we want, when we want, and we don't have to seek permission from anyone else. So if we get articles up there, you know, there might be an issue that's raised in the media in the morning one day, and we'll have an article up by lunchtime in response to that issue.
Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the highlight points to start out with was South Australia last year. The prison guards went on a statewide strike for a pay rise, and usually when staff strike, they got an agreement where they have a skeleton staff to keep the prisons running. But this strike, they completely went on strike, and so there was no skeleton staff to leave the prisons running. And what happened was we had prisoners locked down for 4 days straight, many of them without a change of clothes, without a change of bedding, without any time out of the cell, completely unacceptable. And so we were able to get articles up on that issue and on the issues which really the union were using to leverage the state for extra pay.
Oh, really?
Hmm.
That's fantastic. So what was the last bit? I didn't hear you properly.
We were able to use the site itself to publish articles in response to the union striking and to speak out against. Yeah, to speak out against, I guess, you know, the abuse. Like, they've abused their trust in...
That's right.
..their undertaking to care for prisoners, which they hadn't done at all. They'd left prisoners locked in their cell for 4 days straight without a change of clothes and without a change of bedding for many of them. So, you know, it's...
That's disgraceful conduct.
Yeah, all for an increase of pay, yeah.
And that... So you're using that... I suppose that's a really good example of what type of article can go up there to in a way, you're a watchdog, aren't you, for human rights or violations of human rights?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we're giving an alternate voice to the community. So mainstream media and, you know, government agencies, they always put out what, you know, a lot of it is really like propaganda, and it supports their agenda, and it justifies what they do. And often that justification is incorrect, that misses out facts. And so we give a view from people that have actually spent time in prison. We've been, you know, we've felt the vulnerability of being in state control. And we've both suffered abuse by the state when we're under their control. So the opinions we give and the narrative we give to the community comes informed with that history.
Definitely. And has it actually, how long has the resource been there for? Has Rad Faction been there for?
Yeah, well, we first started this early December.
Cool.
Our workshops have been running since October last year. But, the online publications since early December, and we've had a really positive response. We distribute the articles through social media, and there's been a lot of more than we expected, a lot of engagement with our articles. So... we're very happy with the response from the community in general, and particularly from our community as well.
So that's not just formal. Is it just for formerly incarcerated people, or is it also for people in prison as well?
We address issues, like all address issues with abuse of power. So it could be abuse with prison systems, it's abuse with policing, but it's also like abusive systems and certain laws that are created. Which, you know, although there's no stated intention to direct those laws at a certain group of people in the community, the laws end up affecting, you know, vulnerable people in the community. They might end up affecting youth at a greater extent. They might end up affecting Aboriginal, Torres Strait Islander people, African people. One example is in South Australia, and I believe in Victoria as well, as followed suit, is the government has enacted new laws that enables them to declare certain zones as police or precincts where police can go into those zones and search people with metal wands or drug detection dogs without any reason of suspicion to search them. South Australia, once these laws are rolled out, they haven't wasted any time, and so now they've declared public transport routes, public transport hubs, shopping centres. These are all declared precincts where anyone in those precincts can be subject to these searches without suspicion. And when you think about public transport and you think about shopping centres, you know, we know that those places are frequented often by kids. When I was on school holiday, we went out and hung out at shopping centres. We caught the bus, we caught the train, we caught the tram. And so children are going to be highly impacted by these new laws. And these laws are very obtrusive. They allow, like I said, they allow these searches, like metal detector searches and drug detection searches. But one thing which is really an issue with these laws is that they're very complex and there's not one law for one area. There can be some declarations which allow just a metal detection search, and there can be some declarations which allow metal detection search and a drug detection search, and there can be some declarations which allow certain searches through only certain periods of the day. Oh. And so we've got kids hanging out at these places, going to these places during school holidays, for example, and they're not going to have the knowledge to know what rights they've got when engaged by police in these situations, and they're not going to know what limitations the police have got when they're engaging them in these areas. So, you know, I see that as an avenue where more children are going to be caught up in the criminal cycle. It's going to be, you know, for some children, it's going to be a pipeline to prison. And, yeah, there's really not enough done to educate the public on these laws and how to mitigate the effects of these laws.
I'm really hoping that that Red Faction can really raise awareness, but also that, you know, all these articles and the commentaries, that can save lives as well.
Well, that's what we hope. I mean, we hope to educate parents so that they can better inform their children. And definitely, it could save lives. It could save, people from going down paths that are really, like, disruptive in their life or really affect them in negative ways. And definitely the whole idea is to inform the greater public, the wider public, about the laws, and hopefully public sort of have a better understanding of how different types of laws can actually end up being abusive. So,
Exactly. So we're nearing the end of the interview, but I'm wondering, can you just tell us if people are interested in doing the workshops or getting a physical copy or even going onto the website, how can that be done?
So we advertise our workshops on our Instagram page, which is rad_faction. Workshops we're in Adelaide, both Tabitha and I, so the workshops are just run locally in Adelaide at the moment. There might be some interest interstate, but for now, just local. So, definitely have a look at the Instagram page. There's also other information on that page, helpful information about law, and we've also got our website with the articles.
Yeah.
We will be considering taking submissions from other people. If other people wish to have articles published that are in line with what we're doing, then definitely get in contact with us through our website or our email address, which is 1312@radfaction.com.au.
And sorry, what's the website for Radfaction?
The website is www.radfaction.com.au.
And the workshops are really connected to actually, like, learning about Red Faction, isn't it?
Yeah, correct. And if anyone visits the website, we have a example of the material that we produce from the workshops. There's a section there called Workshop Zines.
Perfect.
We've so far published three magazines, which have the information in those zines has been taken directly from the workshop. So any workshop we do, we involve a bit of expression by artwork from the people participating in those workshops, and we publish that artwork in the zines along with the actual information that we talk about at the workshop.
That's so important. I mean, really, what you're looking at is, you know, looking at, you know, alternative media, which is what 3CR is, and not just alternative media, but alternative media for people in prison and formerly incarcerated, and also vulnerable communities as well.
Yeah, definitely. People in prison, formerly incarcerated, other vulnerable communities, and even, you know, the families and friends of people in prison and affected by abuse of power. It's not just the people affected themselves, but also, you know, it can have big impacts on the family and friends. So definitely for them as well.
Absolutely. I mean, going to visit someone in prison can be traumatic.
Very traumatic because, you know, staff can often be rude to visitors and treat, you know, visitors with the same disdain that they treat prisoners with. So, I mean, I've had a lot of feedback from people who are really unhappy with the way visits are conducted when they go to visit people, or with the way that, you know, they're not informed about the policies and processes to get visits, or if they're banned from visits, they don't understand properly why they're banned or how they get the visits back. So all that sort of stuff can be important too.
Jan, thank you so much for coming onto the program. It's the end of the show, but let's have you back soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Marissa. I appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
You too. Bye.
We have a right to be in public space undertaking political activity. That is not something that people should be telling us that we can't do.
Multiple actions rolling over months and years and create huge sustained pressure of social change.
And what we're seeing around the country right now is increasing repression of protest.
Protest works. That's why I think we're seeing it criminalised all over the place.
3CR. Stay tuned. Stay radical.
And it's goodbye from Marissa. You heard three interviews today. Thank you very much for coming onto the show. And tune in every Monday for the Do and Time Show, 4 to 5, except for this Monday because we've got our special broadcasting for Invasion Day, 10 till 6. And I will be doing the breakfast show from 7 to 8.30 on Monday. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Black fella, white fella, it doesn't matter what your color, as long as you a true fella, as long as you a real fella. Of different races, with different lives, in different places, it doesn't matter what your name is, we got to have lots of changes. We need more brothers, if we're to make it. We need more sisters, if we're to save it. Are you the one who's gonna stand up and be counted? Are you the one who's gonna be there when we shout?
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.